Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to look at killing the messengers, those who bring forward information on the subject of vaccines, how they are dangerous, how they have not been proven safe by true gold standard double-blind placebo-controlled studies. And then when they do a paper or they do a film, they're attacked. And they're attacked not just by an individual journalist, but they're attacked in unison. Within hours, a Variety magazine, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, all the major media, including Barron's, all use the same identical talking points to attack Vax, the new film that Robert De Niro had accepted through very strict standards and then rejected with no major explanation, except that after he had spoken with some scientists, he decided to pull it in the public interest. And then, of course, the New York City Commissioner of Health agreed it was the right thing to do. When is censorship of important scientific information, when is that a good idea? That is a form of medical McCarthyism, book burnings. It's not a good idea. Today we're going to hear from individuals involved in the film, but more importantly in the larger scientific and journalistic community. Journalists, you will hear, who do not censor, who look for the truth wherever it may be, for example, Celia Farber. But to start our program off today is the man who caused this documentary to be made, because without him and the revelations that he was able to undertake with Dr. William Thompson, one of the top scientists involved in research on vaccines and autism at the CDC, we wouldn't have had this information. He is Dr. Brian Hooker. Dr. Hooker is an associate professor of biology at Simpson University in California and a senior consultant for Aeris Corporation, specializing in environmental restoration design. As a bioengineer, Dr. Hooker spent 16 years as a team leader for the Department of Energy's Genomes to Life Center for Molecular and Cellular Systems at its Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, where he investigated gene protein networks, cell signaling, and cellular metabolic pathways. He is a prominent leader in the organization Focus Autism, which is investigating the scientific evidence for a vaccine-autism connection. He has a 16-year-old son with autism, and he's been active in the autistic community for a decade. And over the years, Brian has filed many Freedom of Information Act requests with federal agencies and has received thousands of pages of documentation that support the need for questioning the efficacy and safety of vaccines. And he has also been an independent researcher in the whistleblower case of Dr. William Thompson from the CDC regarding vaccine dangers. His website is focusautism.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's really good to be on your show. I appreciate it.
I'm not going into the censorship at this moment of the film. Rather, I want to go into something that is relevant to this audience, and that is lay out for us who Dr. William Thompson is, why he is important, why if the mainstream media, if 60 Minutes, 2020, Dateline, if any of these programs interviewed him and presented his documentation to their audience, the entire dialogue on vaccine safety in this country would immediately change. But none have done that. To the contrary, they will condemn a trailer of a movie, a 2.5-minute trailer, without ever watching the movie, and say none of this could be true. Then they attack Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and they attacked you. So I want you to share the facts, including today, I promise this audience that you would be sharing information they did not know, not just in what he shared with you and what does he also share with Congressman Posey, representative from Florida who wants to have a congressional investigation and bring him in under oath, as well as other CDC employees under oath, but other information, those 100,000 files that were turned over that you have had access to and that you've seen transcripts as what other smoking guns are in there that need to be investigated. Take your time. The forum is yours.
Great. Well, Dr. William Thompson is a senior epidemiologist at the Centers for Disease Control. He was actually hired by the CDC from, in 1997, and he spent a few years early in his career at the vaccine manufacturer Merck. So he's got sort of a pharmaceutical tie already. Dr. Thompson was the senior epidemiologist that was looking at vaccines and autism. In the he was housed in what's called the Immunization Safety Office from 1997 until about the mid 2000s, and so he was integral on several publications, actually three very distinct publications that denied links between vaccines and autism, as well as vaccines and other neurological conditions that can occur in children specifically. And the first paper that he wrote with his co-authors at the CDC. There were four other co-authors, had to deal with vaccines, specifically the MMR vaccine and autism incidents in a group of children, about 3,000 children in the metropolitan Atlanta area. Most of the research and most of what Dr. Thompson disclosed was around that particular publication. He also co-authored two publications specifically regarding thimerosal, the mercury-containing preservative that is used in vaccines, was used in infant vaccines extensively up through the early 2000s, and now is in the flu shot, including the flu shot that's given to pregnant women. So what Dr. Thompson revealed to me specifically was that there was a definitive relationship between the timing of the MMR vaccine, from birth, and the incidence of autism in African Americans. And that I've talked about on this show before, and I actually extended his analysis with his help, and we found a very, very specific strong effect in African-American males. Those African-American males that received the MMR vaccine on time were about 3.5 times more likely to receive an autism diagnosis versus those individuals that received the MMR vaccine after 3 years of age. And that's an interesting analysis. They didn't even look at children that didn't receive the MMR vaccine at all. I would imagine that if they had looked at that population of children, that the risks of getting an autism diagnosis would be even higher than that 3.5-fold increase that was seen. Dr. Thompson elucidated these results in November of 2001, and he alerted his co-authors of these results. There were also results involving the larger population, all children, not just African-American males, that showed that when children were diagnosed with isolated autism, meaning that they had autism but they didn't have any other associated comorbidities, they saw an astronomical increase in those children who received the MMR on time versus those who received the MMR after 3 years of age. So there were two main problems with that particular paper. And when Dr. Thompson faced his co-authors, the co-authors decided to bury that information, actually throwing away the information at a meeting that occurred sometime, I'm trying to place it in August or September of 2002. All of that information was destroyed, except for what Dr. Thompson secretly kept in his files. And through a sleight of hand, through a statistical sleight of hand, those relationships were denied. And when the final publication came out 2.5 years prior to getting the initial result, the final publication came out in 2004, then none of those effects were reported, or did CDC claim that any type of effect was seen. And Dr. Thompson revealed this to me. He revealed his own analyses, and he desperately tried to warn the CDC. The CDC was going to present those results, actually the trumped-up results, at the 2004 meeting of the Institute of Medicine on Vaccines and Autism. And Dr. Thompson was the chosen individual to show those results. However, he broke protocol and he actually wrote a letter to the director of the CDC, who at the time was Dr. Julie Gerberding, and tried to warn her that there were problematic results that, you know, in his conscience, he had to present at the 2004 IOM meeting. Now, when Dr. Gerberding found out about this and was alerted, instead of doing the right thing and discussing these results and allowing these results to be presented in order to warn the public, they put Dr. Thompson on administrative leave of absence. He was chastised for breaking protocol, for contacting the CDC director rather than his direct supervisor, and I believe he was put on a two-week administrative leave, and he was almost fired. In fact, his direct supervisor had threatened him and threatened to fire him at that time. So the CDC suppressed that information, and there was a concerted effort, despite Dr. Thompson's best effort to get efforts to get that out, there was a concerted effort of the higher-ups, the chief official of the CDC included, Dr. Julie Gerberding, to preclude those results from getting out. Okay. Now, part of the thing that happened afterwards was that Dr. Thompson was very dismayed. He was shut down. He was trying to do the right thing. He was trying to tell the truth. And so he started to look at that point for employment elsewhere, and he started to shop around his resume to major universities, and the CDC was very, very concerned about that. And in order to retain Dr. Thompson at the CDC, CDC officials realized that Dr. Thompson was going to be much more dangerous if he left the CDC because he could disclose what was going on. He could disclose the corruption that was in the Immunization Safety Office, and he could disclose the fact that they were seeing a result of they were seeing a relationship between vaccines and autism, not only in the MMR, which I've discussed, but also specific instances regarding thimerosal-containing vaccines in autism that I have not yet discussed. What the CDC did was, after they put him on administrative leave of absence, after he was reprimanded, then 9 months later, in order to keep Dr. Thompson at the CDC and preclude him from leaving and joining university, they gave him a $24,000 retention bonus. Okay, so he was actually bought off with this $24,000 bonus, and that was about 25% of his salary at the time. And so, you know, because of this entire instance, and it makes absolutely no sense that they would just give him a retention bonus for no other reason except for they were very, very afraid that he would leave the CDC and he would start talking to the public.
Let me try to put this in perspective and see if this is accurate.
Okay.
There are multiple qualified studies showing a link between vaccine usage and autism. Yes or no?
That is correct.
There are multiple situations that are hardcore proof, actual documentation in the person's own words, that Dr. Thompson worked with a group of scientists at the CDC when they showed that there was over a 320% increase in autism spectrum disorders in African-American children under the age of 36 months of age, and they hid that information, then got together in his office with black garbage bags and were told to destroy it. That's obstruction of justice, and that meant that they were all complicit in a conspiracy, and that's a criminal violation, yes or no?
That is correct. That is a criminal obstruction of justice, and it's also from a scientific perspective, it is fraud.
Okay. They then lied about their findings and got their findings published in different journals and therefore perpetuated their lies to the larger community. But this was not the first time the CDC had lied about an autism vaccine connection, because it was also completely familiar with the Verostratin study, where a CDC, FDA, World Health Organizations, and members of the vaccine community met at a secret Christian confab called Simpsonwood. And there they decided, how can we take the figures where 100,000 children were tested and shown to have a statistically significant autism a relationship to vaccines, and how can we make this go away? They were told no cameras, no recorders, but someone made a recording, and Robert Kennedy Jr., through the Freedom of Information Act, got a copy of that, that proved conspiracy by all of these governmental agencies and their agents attending that, and the pharmaceutical industry and the World Health Organization conspiring and to change the nature of actual scientific outcome, which itself is a criminal offense and is scientific fraud. Yes or no?
That is correct.
You have researched this. You have more information than anyone else because Thompson trusted you and spoke with you. And then you believe, as I believe, that if Thompson were a person of character that he now claims after apologizing, and he apologized to Andrew Wakefield, because had he brought those figures out, had he showed there was a correlation in 2004, then Wakefield, who was being investigated by the British Medical Council in 2004 with the other doctors who had worked with him on that autism study at the Royal Free Hospital, he would have been exonerated. Yes or no?
I believe that this would be a very, very strong, compelling piece of evidence to exonerate Dr. Wakefield. I think it would be very, very difficult for the GMC to do what they did with this study actually being corrected.
But this was not the only person at the CDC. One of its researchers, who had authored over 24 studies, was later, and still to this day, is a fugitive from justice hiding out in a foreign country, who received million-plus dollars from the CDC and wrote the articles that became the definitive work of the CDC on showing no connection between autism and vaccines. And yet he is a fugitive from justice right now. Yes or no?
That's true. You're referring to Dr. Paul Thorson, and he's a fugitive from justice. He's hiding in plain sight, and the CDC has entreated the Department of Justice not to extradite him, and the FBI not to extradite him because they're very, very afraid of the exposure and on the CDC, because this is a known criminal, and this is a known criminal that fabricated data in the autism vaccine studies that he authored.
And is it also true, yes or no, that Julie Gerberding, the head of the CDC, overseeing the safety of the CDC's research on vaccines and the autism connection, quit the CDC and took a very lucrative multi-million-dollar deal with one of the largest, Merck, one of the largest makers of vaccines? Yes or no?
That is correct. She took a multi-million-dollar job and is a corporate vice president now. When she started, she was in charge of the entire vaccine division for Merck.
Okay. So that's what none of the media wants to discuss. So little wonder then, when a film comes out, that they attack it. Now, had this film opened at the Tribeca Film Center, been shown, there had been no news, probably, 50 people in the audience. But now that they have rejected it, it's being shown elsewhere, it has caused some focus and concern. Now, in the remaining few minutes that I have with you, explain what other smoking gun material, aside from this of Dr. William Thompson, is in that information.
Well, the smoking gun material specifically is around thimerosal-containing vaccines. And I like to preface this because there are a lot of misconceptions regarding thimerosal and the vaccine program in general. First of all, the only things that the CDC has studied regarding the vaccine schedule in autism are thimerosal in the MMR. Those studies are fraudulent. They have not looked at the compilation of all of the vaccines that children receive in light of the autism epidemic. They have not done that. They have not looked at individual vaccines or vaccine components, save thimerosal and MMR. And they did that in a very reactive fashion, not to provide information, but instead to put down concerns that parents raised and other researchers raised regarding thimerosal exposure through vaccines and also the MMR vaccine. Okay, but what was exposed by Dr. Thompson was an extremely strong relationship between thimerosal exposure and ticks in boys. He saw in his studies that he did, and this was An interesting study that came out in 2007, and Dr. Thompson was the lead author, and he was insistent that the CDC report a very, very strong relationship. And as he told me, whenever they did the analysis, they did the analysis several different times trying to get rid of that relationship, and then they absolutely can't. And ticks are very, very important because they are four times more prevalent in autism than they are in neurotypical children. So, you know, using this, you could say that thimerosal, even in the CDC's judgment through Dr. Thompson's work, was causing autism-like features in children. And the CDC tried to put this down and try to cover up this particular relationship. And essentially, the relationship is shown in the 2007 paper. It's right there in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the relationship is shown. However, in the text of the paper, it is downplayed. And it is, you know, they make some type of Weasley proviso saying that the evaluators were not, did these study were not well-versed in ticks, and so therefore the ticks relationship can be dismissed. And so, but Dr. Thompson was adamant about this and came out with another publication in 2013 that affirmed, again, that thimerosal in vaccines causes ticks in boys specifically, and you cannot get rid of that relationship. In addition, there is a relationship between thimerosal-containing vaccines given maternally. Okay, this is like the maternal flu shot that contains 25 micrograms of thimerosal that is given right now in the United States. When you look at that information and when you look at the background documents that the CDC has hidden, individuals that receive the flu shot that contains the full dose of thimerosal are over eight times more likely to have a child regress into autism spectrum disorder than women who choose not to be exposed to thimerosal during pregnancy. And so these are the only thing, again, these are the only things that the CDC has studied. They have only looked at the MMR. They've only looked at thimerosal. And each time you see, as you peel back the layers, you see that there's a cover-up afoot, and you see that there are strong relationships not only with ticks and boys, but also autism.
So the evidence is strong for an autism vaccine connection.
Yes, using the CDC's own data, using their own information, okay, and getting the background information not only from Dr. Thompson, but also from the Freedom of Information Act.
Professor Brian Hooker, thank you for being on. Stay tuned because we're now going to go to a clip from, just a short clip from Congressman Posey from Florida, who was given all this information and is now trying to get a hearing, but they refusing in the House to do a hearing. Why? This is important information. That's how powerful the pharmaceutical industry is. So listen now to the legislator from Florida who has the same information that Professor Brian Hooker has, saying we need to have this investigated. And yet the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, none of the corporate media are interviewing him, nor are they interviewing Professor Brian Hooker. By the way, last point, Dr. Hooker, one of the attacks against you was, oh, you had an article that was retracted after published. Tell us about that, please.
Well, that's very interesting. The article was accepted for publication by a smaller journal, not really a frontline journal, but a journal called Translational Neurodegeneration. And it was accepted for publication in April of 2014. This article specifically talked about the relationship of the timing of the MMR vaccine and autism in African American males. And this is where I disclosed this 3.5-fold increase in autism in African American males that got the MMR on time. And so everything was fine and dandy. The article appeared in print in July of 2014. And then the CDC whistleblower story started to heat up towards the end of August of 2014, and suddenly I received an email from the journal saying that I had an undisclosed conflict of interest. And the conflict of interest that they claimed was that I, as I reported in the paper, I was receiving money from the foundation Focus Autism, And they claimed that I was also on the board of trustees of Focus Autism at the same time that I received the money. Now, that, in fact, is not true. I was later elected to the board of Focus Autism. However, when I received the money and when I was actually doing this particular study, I was not on the board of Focus Autism, neither was I being considered to be on the board for Focus Autism. So this initial condemnation of my paper from the journal was patently false. And I knew in the background, Dr. Thompson was telling me, you know, in the background that CDC had contacted the journal and they were trying hard to get the journal to retract the article. They wanted it down. So the journal put my article on suspension. It was really kind of a weird term, and they said, we're going to reevaluate this, and we're going to do a separate peer review and see if we should retract the paper. And 6 weeks passed, and I did receive a review of the paper, a very, very brief, very cursory review of the paper, and they said that my methods were non-traditional. They could not understand the methods. And when I looked at the individual that did the review, I was able to look up the individual's credentials. They had no business reviewing my paper. So essentially what happened was CDC complained, and the journal followed suit and retracted my paper. Now,
Brian, every single day, scientific papers are published where the authors have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars they receive from the industry, the vaccine industry or the pharmaceutical industry, and yet they continue never to have an article reject because of that. And you don't have a conflict of interest, and yours is rejected. And the media could have found that out in 5 minutes and made that a scandal. They could have gone after the CDC for being behind the scenes. They could have gone after the magazine. They could have gone after the reviewer. That would have made news to show corruption in science. They chose not to. They chose once again to put their energy on to destroy the messenger so the message doesn't get out. Thank you very much for being with us today, Brian Hooker. Now we're going to play Congressman Posey's clip to show you that even at a national level, a member of Congress cannot get the support for an investigation where these people are brought in under oath.
Recognizes the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Posey, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today on matters of research and scientific integrity. To begin with, I am absolutely, resolutely pro-vaccine. Advancements in medical immunization have saved countless lives and greatly benefited public health. That being said, it's troubling to me that in a recent Senate hearing on childhood vaccinations, it was never mentioned that our government has paid out over $3 billion through a vaccine injury compensation program for children who have been injured by vaccinations. Regardless of the subject matter, parents making decisions about their children's health deserve to have the best information available to them. They should be able to count on federal agencies to tell them the truth. For these reasons, I bring the following matter to the House floor. In August 2014, Dr. William Thompson, a senior scientist at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, worked with a whistleblower attorney to provide my office with documents related to a 2004 CDC study that examined the possibility of a relationship between mumps, measles, rubella, vaccines, and autism. In a statement released in August 2014, Dr. Thompson stated, "I regret that my co-authors and I omitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the Journal of Pediatrics." End quote. Mr. Speaker, I respectfully request the following excerpts from the statement written by Dr. Thompson be entered into the record. Now quoting Dr. Thompson, "My primary job duties while working in the immunization safety branch from 2000 to 06 were to lead or co-lead three major vaccine safety studies, the MADDSP-MMR Autism Cases Control Study was being carried out in response to the Wakefield-Lancet study that suggested an association between the MMR vaccine and an autism-like health outcome. There were several major concerns among scientists and consumer advocates outside the CDC in the fall of 2000 regarding the execution of the Verstraten study. One of the important goals that was determined up front in the spring of 01 before any of these studies started was to have all three protocols vetted outside the CDC prior to the start of the analyses so that consumer advocates could not claim that we were presenting analyses that suited our own goals and biases. We hypothesized that if we found statistically significant effects at either 18 or 36-month thresholds, we would conclude that vaccinating children early with MMR vaccine could lead to autism-like characteristics or features. We all met and finalized the study protocol and analysis plan. The goal was to not deviate from the analysis plan to avoid the debacle that occurred with the Verstraten thimerosal study published in Pediatrics in 03. At the September 5th meeting, we discussed in detail how to code race for both the sample and the birth certificate sample. At the bottom of Table 7, it also shows that for the non-birth certificate sample, the adjusted race effect statistical significance was huge. All the authors and I met and decided sometime between August and September 02 not to report any race effects for the paper. Sometime soon after the meeting, we decided to exclude reporting any race effects. The co-authors scheduled a meeting to destroy documents related to the study. The remaining four co-authors all met and brought a big garbage can into the meeting room and reviewed and went through all the hard copy documents that we had thought we should discard and put them in a huge garbage can. However, because I assumed it was illegal and would violate both FOIA and DOJ requests, I kept hard copies of all documents in my office and I retained all associated computer files. I believe we intentionally withheld controversial findings from the final draft of the pediatrics paper. End of quote of the doctor. Mr. Speaker, I believe it's our duty to ensure that the documents Dr. Thompson provided are not ignored. Therefore, I will provide them to members of Congress and the House committees upon request. Considering the nature of the whistleblower's documents, as well as the involvement of the CDC, a hearing and a thorough investigation is warranted. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, I implore my colleagues on the Appropriations Committees to please, please take such action. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I yield back.
Here's what we have to understand. There has been no members of Congress wanting to have that investigation because they get money from the pharmaceutical industry, from the vaccine industry, and word behind the scenes is this isn't going to happen. Think of what would happen if it were to occur. You would have Verstraten. You would have all the people who had been lying before Congress before. You'd have Dr. William Thompson. All these people would end up either perjuring themselves. This time it would be serious and they wouldn't have government immunity, or they would tell the truth, in which case the entire edifice, the entire vaccine immunization debacle would simply collapse. So that's why we should ask our legislators, have these hearings. Now, we're going to finish our program today with a partial interview from a film where the person who started this whole attack against the MMR vaccine causing autism and said, no, it didn't. And then he attacked Dr. Wakefield, and the scientist was Brian Deer. This is Brian Deer out on the street. You hear all the noise, where a group of parents who have autistic children are not allowed to testify. They're not allowed to show evidence of their own children and the damage, the studies. Instead, it's a witch hunt against Wakefield. They challenged Brian Deer. Brian Deer made several statements, and each one of those statements will then be dissected. You're going to hear things you did not know. You're going to hear that the top scientist for the government in England showed the disaster of the MMR vaccine, yet nowhere is that statement made public. You're going to see where instead of manipulating and using the parents, all parents signed a letter that will be read showing they fully support the work done by Dr. Wakefield's group on their children. You'll also see all the contradictions between what we were told publicly and what actually went on. And remember, the last thing is that Dr. Walker, one of the most famous endocrinologists, one of the most famous gastroenterologists in the world who led the study, he was also tarred and feathered by Brian Deere and by the British Medical Council, lost his license. He appealed it. It went to their highest court, and every charge against him was thrown out. And it was clear in their statements that he was an innocent person vilified by a system that was punitive and was not based upon any kind of science. Why wasn't there a word about this anywhere in the American media? Because if that meant he was innocent, it also meant that Dr. Andrew Wakefield was innocent. But not a word about the truth. Now, to conclude our program, let us hear from the mothers on the street and a commentary on each of the points made. A little hard to hear some of it. The man you're hearing in there arguing with the women, that's Brian Deere. The only person, one person, a journalist working for Rupert Murdoch, that should tell you a lot. And this is his accusation that led to this whole impeachment of Wakefield and the others' reputations.
So how credible is Brian Deere? Let's meet him and find out.
What about our kids, Brian? What about our kids?
Well,
can you explain why they've all got bowel disorders?
No, I can't. They haven't all got bowel disorders. All what kids?
70%.
70% of what?
70% of our autistic kids.
Who's, hang on. You're saying that 70% of autistic children have bowel disease?
70% of our children.
Who's our?
With autism.
Parents here.
No, but 70% of parents here today, their children have bowel disease. Well, why couldn't Wakefield find any children
with
bowel disease?
They also have seizures.
They didn't have bowel disease.
They also have behavioural problems.
They didn't have bowel disease. They didn't have bowel disease. Have you been in the hearing? I've sat through 12 weeks.
Brian,
I don't know if you want to show, you want to talk to me about your case.
This is bowel disease, Brian. This is what it looks like.
No, that's
like.
An X-ray.
That's an impact of bowel.
An impact of bowel is not bowel disease. That's constipation.
Oh,
that's what the doctor.
The diagnosis is bowel disease.
Now, whose diagnosis?
The gastroenterologist diagnosis.
That is not bowel disease.
I've got a diagnosis of bowel
from
disease.
From whom? Is not bowel disease.
That's a dear. Look at that.
That's not bowel disease.
That's bowel disease.
That's diarrhea.
Who are your children, Brian?
They sit on the toilet for an hour every day.
You should look at what the government is saying.
Yeah, have it, actually.
You see, what you do is you spread around these stories.
No, what you do is spin it round.
And you mislead other parents.
We've actually got test results to prove it.
And actually victimise them.
We've got test results to prove
you're
it, actually.
You're actually victimising the parents of children.
You're making a fool of yourself, mate.
Who need to be victimised.
Right,
you should
what
try and get
mean?
The actual right. American government statement on this and not spread these untruths. What you're involved in is just a festival of fabrication.
What, a bit like that, is it now, you think?
Well, no, perhaps if you come and listen to the hearing and heard the evidence, you know.
Brian, do you realise you've staked your professional reputation on what the GMC decides? Isn't that a bit of a risk?
No.
But if they decide that
Let me ask you this question. If the General Medical Council approaches a journalist and says, you've published this material, would you supply us with any evidence you've got, any documents you have, any material?
Does that
journalist have a... Let me ask you the question. Does that journalist have a responsibility, a public duty, to give them that material or not?
Of course.
And I did. So have I done something wrong? It's abuse of me. What's all this abuse? Posters being held up abusing me? Threats to me?
No, I haven't organised that.
Where's my duty if the General Medical Council of the United Kingdom comes to a journalist and says, you have supplied... So you're saying that it was my public duty to supply my findings on request from the GMC to them?
So why
are these groups then publishing these outrageous lies about me, saying that I'm working for the drug industry? Who's paying you? There was some placard out here today saying something about who's pulling your strings or something, and all this kind of stuff. There's some dribbling idiot you've got with you, a guy called Walker, an absolute dribbling idiot.
Look at that picture,
publishing
Brian.
Material suggesting
that
I'm in a conspiracy.
I'm going to
you're doing what you think
that I, one, hang on a minute,
look at that,
that a conspiracy with the government and the Dragon.
I don't think
there is a conspiracy. I don't think there is a cover-up.
Well, why are you involved with this cry shame organisation that is publishing these outrageous lies that there's a conspiracy, and I'm being paid by drug companies to fabricate evidence with the government and God knows what else? Well, then you should get on to these people and say, why are you publishing this stuff?
I'm more concerned to get to the truth. This is what's happened to the children.
Well, then you should come to the hearings and hear.
What about the children?
12 weeks of evidence. Yes. Showing that these children, well, I don't know which children are which, but the children that
one in 100, Brian.
Did not have an inflammatory bowel disease.
The 12 children.
They did not have an inflammatory bowel disease. Ask Isabella Thomas. Is she here? Is Isabella here? Ask Mrs. Thomas whether her two children have got regressive autism. Ask her whether they've got inflammatory bowel disease. I'm not here to debate. I'm not here to debate. Find something that I've published saying that MMR does or doesn't cause autism. Have you found anything that I've published saying whether or not MMR does or doesn't cause autism?
I understand. You're a journalist.
I do my job on that particular subject.
You, as a good journalist, you presumably want to report the Hannah Poling case.
What about the Hannah Poling case?
Have you read
mitochondrial
it?
Injury?
Have you read the job?
Mitochondrial inherited disease.
Leading to autistic-like symptoms?
Autistic-like symptoms followed.
With nine
vaccines leading to fever.
How do you know that
that's not an admission.
Like
the American government has stated absolutely explicitly. I'm not arguing for the American government. They have stated absolutely explicitly.
How many agencies...
Well, I don't.
Well, that's right. That's why I'm here.
So, are you one of those people who thinks that the American Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, the Institute of Medicine, and all the paediatricians in the world are all involved in a conspiracy to cover up alleged horrific injuries to children? That's all they do is peddle a conspiracy.
What has happened is that nobody has independently funded the research to uncover what has happened to our children.
Are you saying that the Department of Health? You're saying that the Department of Health, there are doctors there who knowingly are concealing that MMR causes horrific injuries to children.
Why would they do that?
About the one in 100
children. They might do that because they would argue that for the good of the majority, the herd immunity argument
justifies the British government published the evidence that the Urabe vaccine, the mumps component in the Urabe vaccine, was causing mumps meningitis.
Yes.
They published it.
But they knew that
the government scientists who did the work.
They knew that evidence.
In Nottingham.
They knew that evidence before they introduced it. Well,
we can do Urabe if you want, but I have to go and do Urabe because it's a historical matter. But now, do we wait?
What we're trying to do here is to get sufficient momentum behind us to properly investigate what happens to our children.
Well, haven't they been investigated? There were 1,600 children.
What they've been doing, they were doing this, not clinically, but not doing that.
Better than almost anybody, autistic children are among the most investigated patients. How many specialists have you seen?
How many specialists?
Yeah.
Three or four.
How many GPs?
They didn't know what they were talking about. They thought he was fragile.
So what you're saying is that he was investigated,
but...
What's autism? We don't know, do we?
We know what wakefulness is. What does wakefulness say?
What does he say then?
where he believes that there is an link between the progression and the...
No, what is enterocolitis?
Enterocolitis?
Get onto Google, look up the meaning of the word enterocolitis.
Richard Mills, the guy who's the head of research autism, was on Radio 4 recently and said he acknowledged that children with autism have got bowel disorders.
So, what
do you not think
he's... I've never heard of him.
Well, he's like the head of research autism in the UK, so...
Well, what's research autism? I've never heard of him.
Well, there you go. You don't know much about the topic, do you?
There's only so much that we can discuss in 1 hour program. However, the information of Professor Brian Hooker and Congressman Posey and the women of the autistic children speaking out, challenging Brian Deer in England, none of which has the American media paid any attention to, because they would have a completely different outcome. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour.